Hello, cinephiles, and welcome to Indie Outlook, the show that sheds light on must-see cinema from the Windy City and around the globe. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm of HollywoodChicago.com. My guest today is Sadie Rogers, actress in Chicago, who is also a musician. She's going to be performing at Red Tape Theater February 16th with a late-night acoustic set with guest artist Matt Collar. Very excited to be talking with Sadie today. Thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Hello, you're welcome.
Well, basically, I just want to ask you kind of your roots in acting, or like your roots in the city, because I think it's been about a decade you've been in the Windy City. Is that true? Or
it's almost exactly 10 years now, yeah.
Almost exactly 10 years. So tell me a little bit about what got you interested in acting and just in the business in general.
Well, I always did it, community theater down south and stuff like that, and then I have a theater degree. But I came here thinking I was going to do music theater, and then quickly running from that with all my heart, because it just didn't work for me at all. Music theater in Chicago is just not my thing. So I got into doing like straight plays and other things, and really just kind of dabbled around and auditioned for a lot of random things, and early on actually started working with The Side Project, which is where I met Stephen, which led to all the film stuff. So
absolutely, yes. Stephen Cohn, I have to mention his name because he's sort of a key collaborator in your career, you know, as I've seen. And it was really through his film, The Wise Kids, which was my favorite film of 2012. I've been writing about that constantly ever since I saw it. And that was the first time I encountered you in the film, and you play a wonderfully intriguing character, this character of Cheryl in the film. And it's set in a Southern Baptist church community, and it's about these kids in the summer months between high school and college where they're kind of grappling with their identities, trying to figure out who they are. And it really wasn't until the second, third, fourth time I saw this film, and I've loved it more each time I've seen it, is I really got to sink into the layers of the narrative beyond, you know, everything centering on the three kids. And you really look at the generations, you know, before them that are in this community and how they've all been grappling with those same things. And how it seems like when the kids talk to the adults and have these encounters with the adults, you can sort of see these parallels, you can see these mirrors between the characters. So it's a brilliantly structured film. But you met Stephen through the theater community. That was mainly where you first met there.
Yeah, we disagree on when we first met, but I think it was when I walked into audition for Crave at The Side Project. It was a very long time ago,
yeah.
And gosh, 7-8 years ago. And I did that play with him, and have been following him around as his best friend and his sidekick pretty much ever since.
So what was it that you guys connected on as far as like, you know, like artistically, just a similar sensibility, similar interest in the same themes that he wanted to deal with on stage and film?
I think we have very different sensibilities, and I think that we make each other laugh because of that. So, but I know as of late, I've really been actually like kind of watching him and studying and learning a lot from the way he directs and the way he works. And it's exciting to turn, instead of just being somebody's friend, to actually kind of become somebody's like student almost,
sure.
Like,
yeah,
without him even realizing it. And it's really cool, especially on Black Box. Actually, I was doing a lot of like observation.
That's right. And Black Box is his latest film, which I believe you were associate producer on as well, which is a pretty awesome role. I know what that's like too, when it's like I've done some production assistant work on film sets, and like some, it's only when you're on a set you realize that sometimes those titles are so malleable to like whatever you're doing at any particular moment.
I served cheese plates.
Really? That's
a
one
lot.
Thing you did.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was but I mean Black Box, and this was the fourth film you've worked with him on. The first one was The Christians back in 2008. You played this character Angie, and it was the first time I've seen you sing you know, in a film. You have a really nice little, you know, sort of like embittered, sardonic number, you know, outside an apartment singing about, you know, why won't these Christians let me inside the house?
Yeah.
Because it's a fascinating premise for a film where it's these Christians who are getting together on this night where it feels like there's an apocalypse looming.
Yeah.
And they have these visions that, you know, God is going to be returning at some point, you know, that night. There's like a bunch of different religious leaders have the same dream, and so they feel like this is going to be the second coming. And it's beautiful how the story progresses. I don't want to give away too much, you know, in the way of the plot. But I thought it was a perfect, almost like precursor to The Wise Kids in many ways.
Yeah, it definitely is. And that character is like a young Cheryl almost. There's something to be said in the growth of the concept of a Christian between those two, too, because, like, the unacceptance of Angie, she's left on the porch and she's kind of just looked at from those Christians, and then the stronger Christians and the wise kids, they're so much more accepting of Cheryl. Mm. They let her not worship in their place of worship every Sunday, you know, as long as she needs to, just because she has to sit there. Because she feels that she has to sit there until all of a sudden she no longer does feel that. So it's kind of a neat growth in Stephen's, like, concept of, I don't know, acceptance or something.
Well, that's really fascinating, because that's true, because in the Christians, you're with this older man. I believe is it your father in the film, or it's at first you think it's the father. I believe it is.
Yeah, I think he's like a stepdad. They're both of those characters are a little bit fairy tale like to me.
Mm.
I don't know if you got that from that. I feel like they're both kind of like vague and like what happened right before that? Did they I don't know. They're very I think they're purposefully supposed to be a little bit vague.
Yes, yeah.
A little bit less grounded, maybe even possibly like a test for the Christians inside. That's what I looked at it as.
No, I think that's a fascinating way to put it, because you don't know a lot about either character's past, and yet the way you play it, it really draws the audience in to, like, what's making this character tick, what's going on, and you have a similar relationship, not similar, but you also have kind of like an older adult guardian in the wise kids as well. Mm-hmm. Instead you have the grandmother in that film who's very, you know, devoutly religious, you know, worships, and she, it doesn't seem like she has any kind of internal spiritual struggle that she's dealing with.
Yeah, she's pretty resolute, she's pretty good, she's set.
Yeah, exactly. But Cheryl's character in the wise kids is so fascinating, because we never really get a straightforward answer on why she continues to go, you know, accompany her grandmother to Mass after Mass, even though she's had these feelings of, you know, severe doubt, disbelief. You know, it's not really a community that she's a part of, but she's still there.
It's pretty simple. It's pretty, she's representative of a lot of, I grew up in the church, and my mom was a children's coordinator at a big church, and then we went to another church in my teenage years. And I did not have faith, and at a pretty early age, I kind of broke away from it. Maybe, I think, for sure, around 17 was when I really made the break. Like, and I still went. You just still go.
Mm-hmm.
You don't not go in that society.
Sure,
you do not go to church just because you don't have faith. You go, and you stand with your family, and you sit with your family. You don't necessarily close your eyes during prayer or sing the songs. We still go.
Mm-hmm. Sure, it's that ritual tendency that.
Well,
that people
it's just
have
respect
sometimes.
For
it's
your family.
Exactly.
Like,
sure.
You know, and it's one of the only things that American culture still has that has a lot of respect, which is why, even though I'm not a believer, I think it will be painful to lose the church. that's another talk though.
Sure.
But I. Also, having grown up in the church, there were always those random, slightly sexually ambiguous 30 to 40-year-old members of the family that hadn't quite figured out where to go, that were, like, just there. And they were friendly, and they were sweet as pie, and they came every Sunday, but they didn't stay for Sunday school. You know, those kind that just come to, like, yeah. So Cheryl's one of those. So basically, somebody really similar to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that when you're mentioning that, you know, sometimes it's hard to, like, you know, let go of the church even if you're not a believer. I feel like what this film is a testament to is the beauty of this sort of communal experience, where it's like these people can connect on this, on just the universality of their humanity almost. Where it's like we're one collective human family. That even that we have all of these differences, you know, believers, non-believers. You know, gay, straight, different orientations. That there's something that is connecting these people in that, and at least in that last scene that Cheryl's not a part of, but it's like we can see these people kind of grouping and having this beautiful human moment. And it reminds me of the line that Tim has in there, where it's like, you know, aren't we sort of, you know, each other? You know, aren't we sort of a gift to each other? That mankind is a gift to each other, which is a similar theme in the Christians as well, where it's kind of people connecting on, you know, the there's a spiritual quality in one's own humanity, I suppose.
Yeah, there's not many other places that humans can gather together and care for one another, not just on this earth, but after as well. Yeah. And I feel like in a lot of communal things that are, if you're not religious, it's hard to find that. It's hard to find a place where people are compassionate about you right now and mm-hmm. what you're going through. And they're concerned about what you're going to be going through after you die. So that's like, I don't know. That's something that you just don't find many other places unless you're like, do a lot of yoga at some hippie joint or like,
sure,
get another religion. I don't know.
Yeah. well, and I just can't, and you know, I just can't think of many other films I've seen recently that capture that so beautifully without trying to push some sort of just black and white agenda, you know, down your throat, or have just kind of a very kind of snarky, yeah, you know, just kind of like mean-spirited look at it. And one thing I think Stephen Cohen does so brilliantly, and what I think you do brilliantly as an actress, is there's so much dialogue going on that's not verbal in his work and in the performances as well, that you're conveying so much through the facial expression, through the pauses between words. There's so much being conveyed in The Wise Kids that is not explicitly stated in the dialogue, and that really reveals itself to me on like multiple viewings of it. I think is really, is there much discussion on the set, you know, as an actress, do you like to have like a lot of back and forth with the director about what else is being said, the subtext, or is it, does he sort of allow for an atmosphere for people to kind of do their thing?
I think I think the script implies that the script is well enough written that it gives enough depth already to the actor when they're presented with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that his cast for The Wise Kids were just like the best actors I've ever seen. Him and Sadia, all their scenes are like that, I thought.
Sure.
Without...
Because they play a couple in the film.
Yeah,
They're
able to not even look at each other and just have a whole scene without even speaking, and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
But he does have a really good way of just talking to an actor and letting them, you know, do it over again if they need to. I don't know. I would say from what I didn't observe too much of The Wise Kids, but what I did, I would say it's just implied in the script. It was just obvious to all of those actors that,
mm-hmm.
I mean, all of those awkward things that happen in that movie or beautiful things that happen are happening. And so they're already, I mean, they're not created subtleties. I don't know if I'm answering your question.
Sure.
Correctly.
No, definitely. Well, and you mentioned that you have been observing Stephen. I think it was on his new film, Black Box, which is coming out this year, it's definitely on my most anticipated list for sure.
I can't wait. I'm freaking excited.
Exactly. Well, and you have Josephine Decker in this film, as this wonderful, indie actress. She's been in the indie film scene for some time, and Austin Pendleton, which is just a fabulous character actor. Who I first encountered in the Muppet movie. I always have to keep saying that. the villain's henchman. Can you tell me a little bit about just some things you observed? Because you said that you were observing him on the set. What were some of your duties besides?
I was a PA on Black Box, which was really cool for me as an actor, because I've never done anything like that. So I was like, I would be a stand-in for actors, or I would help get food ready, or just anything they need me to do. I basically just followed Laura Klein, our producer, around like a puppy dog. She's the best. I like the way Stephen respects actors. I've worked with so many different directors in film and theater, and they all have different levels. And it's really... most directors are really wonderful and respectful, and it's really taught me a lot that just talking to an actor on in completely, like, respectfully is the best way to do it. So, me and my friend, recently, my friend Carolyn Herderman and I decided to make a 3-minute short sci-fi film. And it was really funny because when I was shooting it and I was, like, giving her direction, or I didn't shoot it, Ian Moore shot it. And when I was giving her direction, I was like, oh, God, I sound like Stephen. Because he's really the only filmmaker I've been around a lot. So it was kind of funny. I was like a little Stephen.
That is so awesome. Yeah, and so where'd you get the idea for this science fiction short? Or was it something that you've been on enough sets where you wanted to kind of try directing yourself?
Me and Carolyn both wanted to try making a movie, so we did. But the influence is from watching, I like sci-fi a lot, and I think that there's so many movies coming out about alien invasions, and there really always have been. But lately there's more because we have reached a point where we really are about to know who lives next to us in the universe. Mm. Like, we really can reach out now, and we do know where we have reached that point. So
We're getting closer and closer.
Sure. So we're like, oh, God, we got to make a lot of alien movies really fast because we're about to not be able to, because we're about to really know what they look like. That's how I feel. So these movies are always about, like, armies and battles against aliens and, like, really pretty white families that or, you know, go live in a mountain to hide from these aliens, or like skinny blonde girls that like mate with them or whatever. So sure. I wanted to make a 3-minute short film about what happens to 30 to 40 something spinster artsy girls who are like really, really, really into their like performance art or whatever and have absolutely nothing to do with anybody else really when aliens invade. And pretty much nothing happens to them. Nothing happens. So, and it's called Alien Brides because it's like, once all the armies have been killed off by the aliens and all the families have been found in the mountains and killed, then all that's left is like these 30 to 40-something-year-old women in all these cities just sitting around knitting or like putting things on Etsy. And those aliens are going to have to impregnate them.
Well, I think that sounds amazing. I have to see this. You've totally sold me on the premise. Absolutely,
it's gonna be awesome.
It's unlike any alien invasion premise I've heard. So that sounds wonderful. And I think you mentioned to me Stephen Cohn is editing this, or he's helping you with the edit on this.
He sure as hell better. No, I'm gonna send him the. I mean, it's literally 3 minutes. We watched the footage last night, and it was like an hour. I'm gonna send him the footage, and he's gonna make a first cut for us, which is really exciting because I think he'll be able to make it look really cool. It sounds really funny, but it's actually a very beautiful, quiet little, basically just look at a 40-year-old woman and then, and her sister.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. No, I definitely have to check that out. There's a lot. I'm really interested in the kind of like the character-driven, you know, social commentary side of science fiction, when they can kind of comment on what's happening now, but sort of like reflect on, you know, the present and the future sort of thing. You know, I think there's many different types of sci-fi that get overlooked, and this sounds interesting because it's looking at an alien invasion from like the human side, I suppose.
Yeah, and because there's so, yeah, it's so annoying how much I don't think aliens are going to I don't think aliens are going to bomb and nuke us. They're going to get the resources that they need. Oh. And they're probably going to take most of us for, you know, labor.
Yeah.
So it's really all these, I don't know. I don't even watch them all anymore. I just know when I went to see The Hobbit, there were like 5 alien trailers.
Oh,
and
sure.
We were like, what's happening?
Yeah. Well, the only time they'll nuke us is when they want to invade the box office, and that's about it. It's about the only time. It's the only time they'll do it. But I want to ask you too, just really quick on the film that Stephen Cohn did before. It was after The Christians, before Wise Kids. Was this film called In Memoriam that really got to me? Actually, it was a really, really wonderfully bittersweet film about this guy who's kind of like an improv actor type.
Yeah.
Who
he's a dork.
He's a dork, exactly, and he's just. He just becomes devastated when he hears this headline about this young couple that fell off a rooftop where they were seemingly making love, seemingly inebriated at the time. And he just becomes so heartbroken, especially after he sees the reaction to it, you know, online and public, people kind of laughing, kind of snarky about it. And he just he just wants people to realize, you know, the loss that happened here. And it's interesting where this story goes. Again, it's one of those narratives where you don't know exactly what's going to happen next. And he keeps encountering this character again, and this one is actually named Sadie.
Yeah.
That you play in this film, and she's again someone who is very, you know, intriguing. You know, someone, you know, again someone who's drawing you and trying to figure out what's going on with her, because she takes an interest in him. And at first you think maybe she's hitting on him or something like that, but it ends up that you know she kind of gets compelled into this whole. you know, dream project that he has, which ends up becoming, you know, a film that he makes about this tragedy, which is kind of is a hodgepodge of reenactments and documentary footage and things. It was really, really beautiful. Tell me a bit about that character or that experience of that film.
Okay. I think, well, Sadie was based off Sadie, and I basically just would show up and say things, and it would go really well.
So
for
it was really like free as far as like what his structure. For
it was definitely scripted. It was kind of like Sadie if Sadie wasn't an actor. Sadie.
Oh, okay, sure.
But I recently lived in an apartment and had a weird neighbor that would come visit me a lot, and I was like, oh, that's me in that movie. Like, oh, I get it now.
Sure, yeah.
I gotta do that movie again. I thought In Memoriam was awesome. I thought, I don't think you can be more free as an actor than to be playing yourself slightly, like, less cool version of yourself. I just said that I'm cooler than that person. Yeah.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
Like, because then you can, it was really fun. I don't know. I think In Memoriam is amazing. I think it's really, really cool what he does. There's about five of us that play ourselves in it. So,
So it is. So he did directly base those characters off of people that he knew, or
yeah, Kelly and Bill and Hillary and me and I think one other person are all Bill, Hillary, Kelly in the movie.
Yeah, totally. If I had like a distribution company, I'd just have like the Stephen Cohen box set, just sort of
awesome.
Get out there, because it would just, you see the evolution of this artist, and then leading up to Black Box, I can't wait to see that. But I want to talk about some of your theater work as well, because you did a really exciting play, this thing, the Skryker at Red Tape Theater, which you've been doing some stuff at Red Tape Theater recently. And this play, from what I've heard, I did not get to see it, but it was a promenade style production.
Yeah.
If you can kind of explain to our audience a bit of what that is, what that promenade style kind of entails.
Well, Eric Hoff, the director, who's the shit, he's awesome. Can you put that on the radio?
I think we'll be all right. Yeah,
he came to Red Tape, a lovely theater company in Chicago, and decided he wanted to do Carol Churchill's The Skryker. And they decided to do this promenade style, which means basically, it can mean a lot of things. It means basically the audience is going to walk through. But instead of just having them walk through, they had them walk through with movement occurring in amongst them, around them, everywhere, while the walls were moving.
Wow.
So it was a lot to take on. But what they did is it was really cool because Eric, like, kind of like from the beginning, had the ensemble already working on the walls. So it was almost a reverse like rehearsal, because it was almost like tech was at first, and then, I don't know. It was really cool. So the ensemble was brilliant, because they would come in and they would know where. I mean, I don't know. It was like a Rubik's Cube. I didn't do any of that. I never touched a wall. I just walked amongst them.
Yeah.
Like a really messed up Jesus. but anyways, so it didn't get as much hype as I think they thought it would. Opening night, we got completely bashed by a couple reviewers mainly because of the structure. Because the play Skryker is already so crazy. It has gibberish language that lasts for a good, you know, almost 10 minutes at the opening, and then it has several very strange things that happen in it through stage direction that you have to watch these creatures do, these demon creatures from like British mythology. So that's already very overwhelming to see and to hear, and imagine that happening up against you and all around you while walls are moving. A lot of people thought it was too much. But I didn't think it was too much. I thought it was incredible, and I thought it came across more as an experience than a play in a lot of ways, and I think that's just fine.
You know, there are simply some plays that are easier to take notes during and sort of like analyze, break apart for a review. Because I know as a film critic, reviewer, there are just some works of art that are better for that, you know, brand of analysis, that kind of like knee jerk, you know, go to the premiere, write it the next night analysis, and others that are meant to be experienced on like a different level. And just from what I can tell about this play, it seems like that was the kind of thing where it's like, if you're trying to take notes and it's like you really can't allow that experience to really consume you, I think, fully, it seems.
Yeah, it's funny because in Chicago, people are so, they always talk about outside of Chicago, like, that is such a theater town, you can do anything there, blah, 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 you're so much more free. But, you know, really, it's funny how reactive and explosive the bigger critics are when somebody does do something slightly or, you know, extreme. And so I pat people on the back who take those risks and who go there and are overambitious. I think it's great. I think Red Tape's actually doing a show right now. I'm going to say it wrong. Stadium Devil Dare. I'm probably saying it. But I've heard it's exquisite as well, and I'm going to go check that out soon. There's a lot of really great companies that do exquisite work. You know. That often get bashed for it. I mean, Trapdoor's one, Red Tape. I mean,
Trapdoor as well. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you don't have people pushing outside the box, then you're always, you know, kind of confined within those limitations. You know, that no one ever really tries to subvert. And that's what I thought was so exciting. That's why I wish I had seen Skryker, because it just seemed like if you're a theater lover, this is a singular experience that someone's presenting you with. And I think that that's what's wonderful about, you know, when Chicago, you know, is able to, you know, provide a stage for someone, you know, putting together something that ambitious. So
it's such a good play, too. Like, I think, Carol Churchill is just the best. Like, that play has so much to say about, it's kind of a 90s play, and, like, it's so transcendent now. And, like, it's got that weird theme of it's too late.
Sure.
Yeah. Look what you've done to the human race. Look what you've done to the earth. It's too late.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, yeah, it's like in Carol Churchill's world, the aliens are the earth coming to get us.
Oh.
Engulfing us, basically. So yeah, I think it's a really important theme, and I think it needs to be thought more about than, you know, some of the plays being done right now. It's just like dysfunctional families and crazy people, and let's talk about our STDs. And it's like, really?
Sure.
There's something more epic happening around us, I think. I'm not sure, but, you know, look behind you.
Sure. No, sure. Absolutely. Definitely. Well, and you're also working on, you know, different types of music. I've seen some videos on YouTube, some musical performances you've given in the past, as well as in the Christians. But you're going to have a show on February 16th at Red Tape Theater. Tell me a little bit about that, or sort of the brand of music you're kind of exploring at the moment.
I am trying to become more of a rock singer, less of a folk singer. I'm greatly and immediately inspired by PJ Harvey and a lot of other 90s singers, so it's very 90s rock. So I'm writing music. It's very hard. It's going really well. I got a new guitar. I love it. And I'm going to play a late night set with Matt Kaler. He's this musician. He works a lot. He's a Hypocrites company member.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a great company.
Yeah. And I didn't even know Matt that well. I saw him sing at Death Scribe this Christmas, and thought he seemed cool. And he was really awesome. So we've been playing some music together. He's going to be my guest artist. and then eventually someday I'd like to have a really hard rock band, but that's hard to do, and so it's baby steps. Yeah,
sure, definitely. So you kind of want to have like the acting career, the music career, kind of, you know, balancing both of those.
I want to be
at the moment.
Yeah, I want to be making movies, acting in movies, doing theater occasionally, and running a rock band.
Could you see yourself almost doing like a movie musical, like a rock musical type thing, somewhere down the line?
I've thought about stuff like that. I definitely have some ideas, but But I just saw what's that movie? Strange Days with the Juliette Lewis scenes where she sings the PJ Harvey songs.
Yes,
that's a great example of what I would like to do, like sci-fi movies with like really crazy 90s rock in them.
Like, that'd be awesome.
That'd be perfect.
That's a great, that should be kind of its own like subgenre.
It is
kind of in a way, for sure. And do you have any other projects that you're working on at the moment? Any other thing? Because I know Black Box is still in the post-production stages, so that's kind of one to look for this year.
I don't have anything else. Lots of auditions. Just working on the music. And me and Carolyn are, as soon as we can, going to start up our next short film. So we're really excited about that. We don't know what we're going to do yet.
Awesome. I'll be first in line for when this first one comes out.
We're going to put it on the internet.
Excellent. Definitely. So, well, thank you so much, Sadie, for being on the show today. I so appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's so much fun chatting with you. And I want everyone to look up The Wise Kids. It's on DVD right now. Check it out. It's courtesy of Wolf Video. They released a lovely DVD of that. Definitely check that out. And definitely check out Sadie's show. It's going to be at Red Tape Theater February 16th. And thank you again, Sadie, for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Definitely. For all my recent reviews and interviews, you can check out HollywoodChicago.com and Indie-Outlook.com. That concludes today's episode of Indie Outlook. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm, and I invite you to tune in next time for more coverage of the latest and greatest in modern independent cinema. Till then, I'll be on the lookout.